You're listening to another football episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns with Banker Bill.
Ryan, you should get off the internet.
And your guy, Bully Rye.
I think it's a brilliant idea.
Still dancing.
That's right, everybody. It is the season 5 finale of Tap Outs and Touchdowns, not just wrestling. Not just football. This is the season 5 finale of the show. You are not going to get any more Tap Outs and Touchdowns from season 5. It's your guy, Bully Rye, alongside Banker Bill. Talk football. Bill, can you believe we are at the end of season 5?
No. No, I can't believe we're done with the NFL season. I mean, it just goes so quickly. The time of year that it goes by, you know, it's fall. It's holiday season, and it's all very exciting, and then it's over, and you're like, oh, depressing.
Yeah, if you're joining with us, I don't mean to just skip past that. I'm right there with you. The end of football season is always sort of that, like, well, now what do we do? Yeah. But if you're going to join the show live with us tonight on Facebook.com/tapoutsandtouchdowns, X at tapouts and TDs, or on YouTube, make sure you join the conversation because, again, we have a lot to talk about. The Super Bowl has come and gone. The NFL season is over, but we're not quite done with football, and we're going to start season 6 the way that we started season 5 with a UFL primer, and that's a UFL primer and not an XFL primer, because if you've been living under a rock, the UFL, the United Football League, kicks off March 30th. Again, if you've been living under a rock, the UFL consists of both the USFL and the XFL. They announced back in December the merger of the two leagues. 8 teams between the two leagues, 2 divisions, the XFL division and the USFL division. Technically, 5 teams came out of the XFL and only 3 made it out of the USFL. Bill, what were your thoughts when you first saw this news that the UFL was becoming a thing and it was so long to the XFL and the USFL?
Well, I think I was bummed that the XFL was gone. I think between the two leagues, I think you and I both enjoyed the XFL quite a bit more. We covered it quite a bit more on the show. And we were really having fun with the XFL season all the way up until the final, the XFL championship. Even though I think that kind of fell flat a little bit with the Arlington Renegades winning the championship and getting back to 500. That was a little weird. Based on how they got into the playoffs, there were teams that didn't make it because of how they had the divisions. But we had fun with the XFL. The USFL was extremely boring. And when I heard about them merging, there was some fear that they would go to the pod system like the USFL had. And I think we both agreed that that was what made the USFL so boring. Mm-hmm. They haven't done that. So that's good. They are going to play in home stadiums. And then it became which teams were going to survive the merger, because they told us it was going to be 8. It might be 10. There's no way it's going to be 16. So we're going to lose some teams. And we know who those teams are right now. And unfortunately, my favorite team in the XFL, I didn't have one in the USFL because, well, I just didn't care that much about that league. My team didn't make it. So I'm a free agent now. I'd figure out who I want to root for. But I think what I was scared of the most was that they were going to do the pod system. I did not want to watch spring football, cover spring football, do it on the podcast if we were going to have 100 people in the stands. I just can't deal with that. The good news is we get St. Louis Battlehawks games. I'm so excited to watch some St. Louis Battlehawks games.
Not just St. Louis. We get the
D.C.
What do they call it? The beer snakes back.
The D.C. The Defenders, yeah. I can't wait for that either. To be honest with you, Ryan, I looked up today the distance between my house and Birmingham.
To go watch a USF or a UFL game? Doable.
Yeah, I can't decide who I want to root for. So I'm trying to pick what's going to be my rooting team, and I'm doing it maybe based on players. Quentin Dormady got signed. You remember Quentin Dormady? He was the quarterback of my Orlando Guardians. He got signed by the San Antonio Brahmas. So do I want to be a Brahmins? I can't decide right now. So I was looking, what team is the closest to me? And, well, Birmingham's just a little bit too far for me to care that much. It's 4 hours and 37 minutes to the minute. So I don't know if I care that much.
As someone who has been to Birmingham before, I will tell you it is not worth it whatsoever. It's
Well, they were the best team in the USFL last year. And
who cares?
And I saw their roster. It's pretty neat. It's pretty. Now, granted, these are all players that washed out of the NFL. You know, they're not to anybody to get excited about, but there's like a second round draft pick on their team. There's, I mean, there's guys that they expected to be good players, and obviously they were a good team last year. And I don't know. I saw the, they're like, look at this roster. And I was like, ooh. And so I looked it up, like Birmingham, maybe I want to go watch a football game. It's a little far, but it's doable. It's doable if I really want to.
Well, the only game that I got to watch in Birmingham was not fun for me, as the Gamecocks lost to UConn in the PapaJohns.com Bowl.
Losing to UConn.
I know. Shannon Smith points out, and it was the next point I was going to get to. Matt Corral just got signed into the UFL. Another quarterback taken in a draft before Brock Purdy.
Well, there's a lot of those. That's not fair. There's a lot of those.
But Brock Purdy just played in the Super Bowl, and Matt Corral is going to the UFL. So it's interesting to of note, at least. You mentioned a lot of teams didn't make it in this merger. Three teams out of the XFL didn't make it. The Orlando Guardians, which I'm not surprised about. They couldn't fill the stadium. Even more so than them, the Vegas Vipers couldn't fill a high school stadium.
Terrible.
Out in Las Vegas, so I'm not upset to see Vegas go. I was a little surprised to see the Seattle Sea Dragons go, because like the Battle Hawks and the DC Defenders, they could fill a stadium.
They actually didn't, though. That was the problem, is they didn't have a very good average attendance. Remember, I took statistics on average attendance last year. I think they were the third worst. So it wasn't very good.
That's wild. I guess it makes sense as to why they're gone. When you look at the USFL, they also – so both leagues had a Houston team. So the Houston Gamblers of the USFL did not make it, but the Houston Roughnecks did. So that Houston Roughnecks team will be in the USFL division, along with the Memphis Showboats, the defending USFL champion Birmingham Stallions, and the Michigan Panthers. And as Bill mentioned, they're all going to be in their own stadiums, their home stadiums. The USFL was unwatchable. I mean, I think a lot of people would say, that the XFL was unwatchable, and those are people that just chose not to watch it. The XFL was really exciting football. The storylines behind AJ McCarron and coming to play, like, you know, for next to nothing, so his kids can watch him start and play football again. There was so much to watch. And again, we're going to talk more about the UFL starting in season 6. We're going to come about a week or so prior to the UFL starting, and we're going to give you that primer episode. We're going to sort of break down the teams, go through some rosters, see if there's some big names on these teams, because I believe, and I obviously can't remember his name all of a sudden, there was a running back that played.
You did mention AJ McCarron. It was announced today. He is coming back.
Oh, let's go.
He was released by the Bengals, and so the basically a whole bunch of people were putting on Facebook that AJ McCarron, I think they called him the prodigal son. I was like, yes, like, that's awesome. But he is coming back to the St. Louis Battlehawks, so that's super cool. They also, you want to hear something terrible, right? We should put this in the UFL primer. But I saw numbers of, they had this, what they called the dispersal draft, where all the teams that got liquidated, because there were 8 teams that got liquidated, the players off of those teams had an opportunity to get drafted by the teams that remain.
Yeah.
I think there was one team that had 23 players drafted in the dispersal draft. The Orlando Guardians, my favorite XFL team, had the least with 3.
That makes sense.
It's really bad. And Quinton Dormady was one of them. It was really bad.
It makes sense. A couple comments in the chat. Shannon, I'm not sure the quarterback, the team that lost their quarterback as well.
Josh Gordon. I do not think Josh Gordon is coming back. Shannon Smith just asked that question. I do not think he is coming back.
And then you've got Tim Costello. When he thinks UFL, XFL, he thinks Seattle for some reason. I'm right there with you. They seemed like they had people in the stands. Maybe it's because they made more noise than anybody in the USFL did in the stands last year season, because they couldn't fit 50 people in one of those stadiums. Max Borgie is the name I was thinking about. Max Borgie, star running back for the XFL last year. He's announced that he is not coming back, and I think he's stepping away from football. So that'll be interesting. But nevertheless, a lot of fun stuff to talk about when we go to the UFL primer. We want to invite you again. We are not endorsed. We are not paid.
We just loved it.
By the UFL. We just love football. And so, especially if you're one that's like, I can't get into the UFL, join the show, because if there's not going to be any other show covering the UFL, we will be. So we will be your headquarters to talk all things UFL when that season starts in March. So make sure you tune into Tap Outs and Touchdowns when we come back for season six. As far as broadcasting goes, the UFL, if you remember the UFL, they were kind of talking about where the USFL, I should say, where they were broadcast versus the publicity and the coverage that the XFL got. The UFL will broadcast not only on ABC and ESPN, but also on Fox and FS1. And I think that's huge that they were able to broker a deal, especially now Fox owned the USFL. So you knew that they were going to be in play to broadcast. Yeah. But the fact that they were able to come together and partner with ESPN to broadcast on all four networks is a huge deal. And to me, even a bigger deal is that you've got the biggest matchup of the season in week one, a la, and this is to Bill's favorite sports, NASCAR, starting the season with the Daytona USA. You are starting the UFL with a matchup between the XFL and the USFL champions from 2023. It's going to take place Saturday, March 30th at 1 p.m. on Fox. Bill, are you? I mean, I'm guessing you're as excited as I am, considering that, you know, we get the champions of leagues facing off. I mean, this is sort of a dream matchup if we were looking at leagues last season.
Yeah, it's the opener. That's going to be a lot of fun. I think we're it's really cool to have that anticipation possibly build for that game, because it's like with the AFL and the NFL merged and you started to have the Super Bowl. This is kind of like the Super, like you said it, it's like the Daytona 500. It's the Super Bowl at the first game of the season. Now, granted, obviously new rosters, new teams, you don't know what's going to happen, but at least you can say that, hey, these were the two champions. One of the things though, Ryan, I wanted to talk about really quick with the way that the broadcasting is happening with the UFL is that they actually, and you and I talked about this last season, that they kept bouncing around with times and we never really knew when the UFL was going to be on. They did do a better job of that. If you look at the schedule of the times that they're going to be playing, they do bounce around a little bit with start times. Like sometimes it's noon, sometimes it's one, and it looks like they're going to do about a noon or 1 o'clock game on Saturdays every week, and then a primetime game Saturday night, and then they're going to have two games on Sundays. Now, there is, I think, like the fifth week of the season, there's two games at the same time on Saturday night, so that's kind of weird, but both broadcasted.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little weird, but at least they're staying close to their times, because I think we said this – the NFL, you always know. We know. It's Sunday. What time is the NFL on? 1:00, 4:25, and 8:20.
Yeah, 8:30.
You know exactly the time. So that's what the UFL needed to do. I think they're kind of doing that. I think that's going to help with TV ratings. I'm looking forward to all of it, man. We're going to have football all weekend for like, you know, March through June, or I guess April through June. It's going to be really cool.
Yeah, to Bill's point, I mean, it's – They're not really bouncing around. I see 7 o'clock kickoffs of that week five, Saturday, April 27th, which doesn't make sense. I wonder if you're going to get regional coverage like you would in the NFL for those games. But when you look at the breakdown of the broadcast, ABC is going to broadcast 10 games. ESPN is going to broadcast 10 games. Fox will broadcast 21. And ESPN2 and FS1 will each host one game. So at least you're going to go know what network to go on. You're not going to have to worry about going to ESPN on, let's say, a Sunday afternoon and wondering, am I going to watch like college bowling? Am I, you know, or some other like irrelevant sport to sort of, you know, finish my weekend with some sort of sports. Mama Frick in the house. Awesome. And to Tim Costello's point, it beat spring training. So I'm not against him on that either. When you look at, I already mentioned the breakdown schedule. We're not going to go through the schedule. I will mention that it is a 10-game schedule that will finish on June 2nd, followed by the conference finals or the conference championship games, the UFL or USFL and the XFL conference championships taking place the weekend of June 8th and June 9th on ABC and Fox, respectively, followed by the UFL championship game Sunday, June 16th at 5 p.m. on Fox. Obviously, they're not calling it the Super Bowl, but we get a UFL championship Sunday. So we get like a second Super Bowl for anybody that actually cares about the league. And you know that if you do want to get into the league to listen to Tap Outs and Touchdowns, because we are going to be your headquarters for all UFL conversations. Because I can guarantee you that no local radio station, no national radio station is going to be consistently covering the UFL like we will. So no, I'm excited to come back to season six and talk UFL football. If you're joining the show live with us tonight, again, welcome to our season five finale. We're talking all things football. We are getting into NFL talk, but make sure if you do want to join the conversation, leave a comment, whether you're watching on YouTube or Facebook. Those are the two platforms being watched right now. leave a comment, join the conversation, give us your thoughts, because we got, I'm sure you're going to have a lot of thoughts when we talk about the Super Bowl that took place last weekend. What's that, Super Bowl 58 that we've already gotten to now? It's crazy to think 58. About.
58. Makes you feel old.
What makes might make you feel old? I've only been alive for can't even do quick math. What's 56 minus 37? What's that, 19? I haven't been, there were 19.
19, yeah.
Yeah, there were 19 Super Bowls that I was not alive for. So you have that. Tim Costello wants to know if Taylor Swift will be in the UFL. That's actually a really funny question. I don't know.
It depends on how hot the tight ends are.
Good point. Mm-hmm. And considering they're like UFL players, she's like, no, it's NFL or higher for me. And because she doesn't know that there's nothing higher than the NFL.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's, yeah.
You have to go to like European soccer.
I'm really proud of that subtle joke that I just came up with off the top of my head. All right.
Pretty good.
Super Bowl 58 took place over the weekend. And for the first time since the early 2000s, New England Patriots, your Kansas City Chiefs, are back-to-back Super Bowl champions as they defeat the San Francisco 49ers 25-22 in overtime. Volley Polly in the house with us tonight. Good to see you here, Volley Polly. Bill, we watched this game together, and watching it up until the fourth quarter, it was not a fun game to watch. What are your thoughts on what we got to see together this past Sunday?
Sloppy. It was a sloppy Super Bowl. It was weird. It was an indoor Super Bowl. You would expect, you know, we've seen Super Bowls played, I think, in the rain in Miami. Wasn't that the Indianapolis-New Orleans Super Bowl was played in the rain, I think? And it that one seemed like it was better played.
Chicago, Indianapolis. Because Chicago.
The Rex Grossman Super Bowl.
Yep, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, all right. So that was played in the rain, and this was indoors, and you saw a lot of fumbles, you know, inexplicable fumbles. You had the punt that went off of somebody's foot. How often do you see that in the NFL? Not very often. It looked like a college game. I think we were all talking about it in the room that it looked a little bit like a college game for a while. Maybe that was a lot of anxiety with the players, a little bit of nervousness going into this, you know, playing the Super Bowl. But it was a sloppy game. It was not super fun for a very long time. I mean, it was close game, which is good. But it just wasn't very good football. And then, you know, Patrick Mahomes did Patrick Mahomes things. Brock Purdy did Brock Purdy things. And, it ended up being a pretty fun game at the end.
Yeah, so first of all, if Kansas City had scored that touchdown and we had gotten to 25-22 in regulation, that extra point would have meant that I would have walked home with some Super Bowl squares money. I had all the bad numbers in Banker Bill's Super Bowl squares.
Yeah.
And I needed a 6-2. I'm like, oh, I can get it. And then I realized, no, they're not going to have to kick the extra point in overtime. So I'm screwed. Yeah, to your point, Brock Purdy played like Brock Purdy has done all season. He didn't turn the ball over. He only had one sack. Christian McCaffrey played like Christian McCaffrey did. 160 total yards. It would have been a stud performance in a fantasy football championship game. But the passing game really never got going. Brandon Ayuk is your leading receiver for the 49ers. Three catches, 49 yards. We also saw Deebo Samuel go down with a hamstring injury. He would play through it. But Deebo Samuel went down in this game. And George Kittle went down late in this game. I think without the two of them, or at least the two of them fully healthy, it obviously took away from that offense because the Niners couldn't really do anything much in the second half. And to your point, Patrick Mahomes with the Super Bowl MVP, 333 yards, two touchdowns. He did an interception in the first half. It was crazy to think about the fact that Travis Kelce had one catch in the first half, and he finished the game 9 catches, 93 yards, because, you know, if you want to believe that the NFL is rigged, you knew that the Travis Kelce was going to get his. To get on a somber note for real quick, Mama Frick put something in the chat. Prayers to those hurt in the shooting today at the Kansas City Parade. It's really unfortunate, and to what she's saying, you can't get out and celebrate your team because violence will break out and can break out at any time. So an unfortunate situation at a time that should be celebration. So prayers to those who were affected by that tragedy in Kansas City. Let's get back to football here. Before we talk more about the game and sort of some of the outcomes of the game, because there was some breaking news right before we came on the air that I'd like to talk about too, that just came to mind that wasn't originally in the notes here. But everybody's talking about the halftime show here in Super Bowl 58. Usher. Usher was the halftime artist, so to speak. Had some special appearances in the show by Alicia Keys, Lil Jon. I didn't recognize Jermaine Dupri. I thought that was like CeeLo Green or something like that. He looked.
Oh, that's really who that was.
Weird. That was Jermaine Dupri.
I don't even know what he looks like, but okay.
And then every female born after the year 1990 freaked out when Ludacris came out. And then the girl singing the guitar was her.
I freaked out when Ludacris came out. What do you mean?
Every person born past. Like, well, no, because you were born.
The dude from Fast and the Furious 2's here, and it's.
If you ask Cat Williams, he's part of the Illuminati, and the reason Fast why he's been part of the Fast and Furious franchise is because of the Illuminati. Anyway, Bill, I've seen mixed reviews. I've seen some people say this is the best performance ever. Ooh. I've seen some people say this is the worst performance ever. What were your thoughts on the Super Bowl halftime show?
Oh, we talked about it right away. I thought it started really slow. It was a little awkward. I didn't understand why they were. I don't know why we're talking about this. First of all, I know you got excited about it. I don't know. It started a little awkward. The camera angles were poor. We were watching a lot of dancing and bad music because he had some bombs. I didn't enjoy the music. And then it went into some of his hits, and then it got fun. The roller skating was super cool. I like that. Lil Jon being there and finding out he's not dead. That was good. What else was fun about it? I mean, Ludacris. I like Ludacris. He was pretty cool to see. And Alicia Keys looked really good. She was fantastic. She's a great singer. So, and that piano is neat. But that's it, man. I don't know. And by the end, I was enjoying it. So at first, I was like D-. This is terrible. And then by the end, I think I said I felt like it was a B. So.
In those,
that's my Siskel and Ebert moment.
They had a costume change in the middle of the show when he got on the roller skates,
Globo Gym uniform.
Yeah, the Globo. No, it was Globo Gym. The purple cobras.
Yeah,
I was thinking that during the performance, and then when I started seeing it online, I'm like, okay, I'm glad I wasn't alone. It was hilarious. Listen, every year we have this debate, and I feel like that's why we wanted to talk about it on the show, is that how does this rank on all-time Super Bowl halftime performances? It felt like Usher was lip-syncing at times, but I don't think he was.
I don't think he was either.
The idea that like this was the best one ever, it just that's because people have recency bias. They don't remember how like as controversial as she could be. Katy Perry put on a great halftime show. Lady Gaga put on a great halftime show. For some reason, people didn't like the Dr. Dre Eminem, like the Death Row Records Super Bowl show. I loved it. I think people are so quick to have recency bias with the Super Bowl, you know, the halftime performances.
100%.
Tim Costello.
They enjoyed it. That's all they should say. There's no reason to compare them. Nobody's going to win an award for the best Super Bowl halftime show ever. If you enjoyed it, that's what it's there for. And was it enjoyable? Yeah, I think so.
No, listen, you're absolutely right. It was a great show. It was a great halftime show. It started off slow but finished strong, kind of like the Super Bowl. I mean, it was fitting for the Super Bowl 100%. With the way that it went down. Let's get back to the game because there was some fallout after the Super Bowl. Again, won in overtime. The overtime coin toss went to the San Francisco 49ers, who elected to receive. Bill, at your house, I said, oh, I think this is the first playoff game with the new playoff rules. And I think he said, what do you mean? I'm like, oh, they can score a touchdown and the other team has a chance. Like, no, that didn't happen. I'm like, no, it's the Buffalo Bills rule. It's the Josh Allen rule. They changed the rule when the Bills didn't have the opportunity to come back and score against the Chiefs. And so they changed the rule here. But apparently the 49ers didn't get the memo.
Who cares?
Because strategically speaking, it would have made sense for them to kick off, see what happens Kansas City down the field, and so San Francisco then has to match or beat
them. Why? Your objective is not to score a touchdown ever?
No, your objective is to win the game. So if your defense goes out and gets a stop, then you know a field goal wins the game. If your defense gives up a touchdown, you know that you have to score a touchdown, and potentially you can get the 2-point conversion to win the game outright or lose the game in what could be the most exciting play in Super Bowl history.
I'm not feeling it. They wanted to set the tone. They wanted to go down and try to score a touchdown. If they do that, they put all the pressure on Kansas City. Hindsight's 20/20. Everybody that's talking about this should shut up. The best thing that would have happened is if the 49ers had scored a touchdown and their team ran out on the field thinking they won the Super Bowl And then they would have found out that they did not. That would have been fun.
And they would have gotten the personal foul, the unsportsmanlike conduct. The extra point would have been pushed back. That could have been really fun. And then it would have
been completely deflating. It would have been so much more fun, so much more controversial. People talking about this is just dumb. They're just trying to say something. It's just dumb. It doesn't make any sense to me. They were trying to, even if you went first, we've seen teams in overtime try to score that touchdown first, right? So they just did what's normal in overtime. It doesn't matter. Why put the pressure on yourself? If Kansas City goes out and scores a touchdown, which they did, all of the pressure is now on San Francisco to run their offense. That probably is more of a detriment to San Francisco. I don't know why people are making a story of this, and it frankly pisses me off that we're talking about it. No, I'm just kidding. Not us. It pisses me off that other people are talking about it because I feel like they're just trying to crap on the 49ers, which I like, but not in this case.
Your daughter's in the house. Katie Tomer says, wow, look at that bear in the background. Miss 24 minutes, but you can always come back and watch more.
That's my Valentine's present for my daughter right there. Super cool. Bright orange.
Oh, that's awesome.
A little plush bear.
I hear she got a Valentine's Day present.
I heard about it too, Ryan.
I don't know where she would have gotten that. That's phenomenal. I know you say that people are taking a chance to like take a dump on San Francisco. Do you buy the fact that they didn't know the rule, or do you think that's just an excuse?
Why would they come out and say they didn't? They said they didn't. They said we didn't know the rules. We didn't know that if they, you know, if we scored a touchdown, they were going to get the ball back. What is it? It doesn't matter. If they score a touchdown, what does it matter? It doesn't matter. It's ridiculous.
Okay.
It's
ridiculous. Fine. We can move on. So the next question.
Well, we can debate it. I mean, you can continue to think that it really doesn't matter. But I think
it's a cop out. I think regardless of whether they knew the rule, the idea is you need to go down the field and score instead of kicking the field goal. If you want to pull a Dan Campbell and go for the fourth down conversion, do it. But they didn't. They kicked the field goal. Kansas City throws.
Which they should have. Yeah. Which they should have. Because at that point, it puts a little bit of pressure on Kansas City. They have to go score. Their defense just didn't show up in that moment. I mean, it is what it is. Maybe Dre Greenlaw should calm down and not blow his AC or his Achilles jumping onto the field.
Like, was it his Achilles? I thought it was his quad. He blew his Achilles.
And it's ridiculous. Whatever it was. He did it being way too excited to get onto the field.
I'm actually looking up right now. Achilles tear. Yep, he tore his Achilles. You're absolutely right. Wow.
I've never seen anything like that in my life. Getting onto the we said it. It was weird. He seemed overhyped getting out of when he was on the field. I'm like, whoa, Greenlaw's like way over the top right now with his enthusiasm. I mentioned it while the game was going on, and the very next scene, I don't want to laugh about it. I've just never seen it. That's the thing. It's just so unique. I'm laughing about it. But the very next series, he gets excited and tears his Achilles trying to run on the field. I mean, calm down, dude. Just maybe does that mean I don't know how Achilles tears works. Tears work. If you tell your Achilles, does that mean it was inevitable, or was it the way he moved at that moment?
Maybe a combination of both.
I don't know.
I couldn't tell you. So two things real quick. Tim Costello back in the chat makes a really good point. They missed an extra point, did the Niners in this game?
They did. It was blocked.
Which means if they had made that extra point, then the Chiefs don't have to kick a field goal in regulation. They have to end the game with a touchdown in regulation. So there's that. Yep. You mentioned you put the pressure on the Chiefs, and the Chiefs – The Niners defense wasn't really able to stop the Chiefs the entire second half. Did you hear that Steve Wilks got fired from San Francisco earlier this week after the game? Yes. What? They apparently – so I don't – let me see if I can pull up the news, like the actual article, while we're on the air. Wow. But
I have an idea. I have an idea. Steve Wilks held the Kansas City Chiefs to 25 points in a full overtime period, 19 in regulation, correct? As the I see that they failed is on offense, so maybe they should fire their head coach. That might be a better idea because they only scored 22. That's why they lost, not because the guy didn't have a good defensive scheme. Give me a break. Yeah,
real quick.
It's Kyle Shanahan. That's Kyle Shanahan trying to find somebody as a scapegoat. Problem is him.
So, baseball and World Series, same thing during the celebration. Tim Costello said people have gotten hurt that way. And Volley Polly loves your hat. So, there's that.
Thank you.
So, here's the article that I'm going to read from the New York Post about the coaching change. San Francisco 49ers have made a major change, coaching change, after their heartbreaking overtime loss to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl 2024. Steve Wilks has been fired as the defensive coordinator. Head coach Kyle Shanahan announced on a conference call with reporters Wednesday. Wilkes, 54, lasted just one season in San Francisco after he was an interim head coach for the Carolina Panthers. Wilkes was the Arizona Cardinals head coach in 2018. I know that there's reports that fans didn't like Wilkes because they didn't like some of his defensive schemes, that he ran some more zone than man. We talked about that last week, about the number of teams in the NFL that ran the man press coverages, and maybe the Niners were up there, but at the more inopportune times is when they sort of didn't and allowed teams to kind of maybe get back into games, they let themselves get behind too much. I mean, they fell behind against the Lions. They fell behind against the Packers. And I know you said that Shanahan was looking for a scapegoat, so that's what you believe. You think that the firing of Steve Wilkes is nothing but Kyle Shanahan deflecting and putting it on Wilkes.
If I told you that the 49ers held the Chiefs to 19 points in regulation, is that a good or bad thing? Do you think – I mean, they scored 38 the year before in the Super Bowl against the Eagles. So yeah, is 19 points bad? Is that bad? So in my opinion, and I'm just a fool that watches football on TV, but in my opinion, they failed on offense. They scored 22.
So here's I'm glad you're kind of transitioning my next question, because I saw somebody on one of the national pundits say that this was the worst San Francisco, or this is the worst Kansas City Chiefs offense in this run that they've been in. Like they weren't great all season. I think you mentioned it during the game, and whether or not you still believe that or not, you thought the Detroit Lions could have beaten this Kansas City Chiefs team.
I do think
I've said it throughout the playoffs that if that game against the Dolphins was not in Kansas City, where 70 people went to the hospital because of how cold it was, I think that the Dolphins were better than the Chiefs.
I don't believe that.
Of course you don't, because you're a Dolphins fan.
I just don't believe that. I don't think that's true.
So obviously the easy answer is yes. But were the Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs truly the best team in the NFL this season?
I think the best team in the NFL was probably the Baltimore Ravens.
Yep.
But they play the playoff games for a reason. You have to win in the playoffs. And the Baltimore Ravens have a quarterback. You play the games. Yeah,
you play the game.
Yeah.
You play to win
the Baltimore game. Ravens have a quarterback that cannot win in the playoffs. He cannot figure out how to do that. The pressure gets to him. Maybe it's the fact that he's the lowest Wunderlich scoring quarterback in the history of the NFL. Don't know. Just doesn't seem to get it.
Yeah, listen, I would argue, obviously, the easy answer is yes. They won the Super Bowl. Therefore, they were the best team in the NFL. I think there are a number of teams. I think the Ravens were better than the Chiefs. They caught him on a bad day.
I wanted Lamar Jackson to get his this season. I wanted it to happen.
And and not to mention the coaching scheme in the game was terrible. Like it's like they didn't want Lamar Jackson to run it all over Kansas City, which doesn't make any sense.
I had a picture that I deleted this week. It was a picture of they always call about rush lane integrity, right?
Yep.
Where you try to keep a running back that would normally run from running out of the pocket, and that's basically just keeping your defensive tackles in and then making a pocket, and he can't get out of it, right? But you're also giving up a little bit of a pass rush as you're trying not to make moves on offensive linemen as you're trying to stay in that lane, right? Yeah. So I had a picture of the pocket against Kansas City Chiefs when they played Lamar, and they didn't even hold rush lane integrity.
Nope.
Lamar was like he was told not to run.
Yeah.
And so it was this weird picture where there's all these running lanes and the defensive linemen are all over the place behind him and everywhere else. And in the picture, it said this play took 4.7 seconds before he was strip sacked.
Yep.
And he did not run. He stayed in the pocket. And it's just he's got all this area to go. And I have no idea what Baltimore was doing, why they told him to stay in the pocket and beat him with the pass. I have no idea. But anyway, we're kind of digressing from who we think was. No. I still think Baltimore was the best, though.
Shannon poses a good question. Shannon Smith back in the chat, co-host of the Cat Cave over on the Fans for Sports Network. Do you think Lamar Jackson played scared against the Chiefs in the playoffs?
I hate to believe that Lamar Jackson, it's a weird thing now. It's been so long that he has been known as a playoff failure that it may start to creep into his head that he can't make mistakes, because if he does, he will continue to be a playoff failure, and that's just going to make him worse. I don't know if that's playing scared. I mean, I guess that could be the definition of playing scared probably, but it might be, he might be thinking about it. If I mess up here, and granted, look, there was that, what's his name? Zay Flowers fumbles at the goal line. Like, if that happens, if that doesn't happen, that's a tie game late in the game. Baltimore might still win. That's not Lamar's fault. But at the same time, they looked like they were far and away the best team in the NFL when they beat San Francisco in Santa Clara, and they just did not play like that when they played Kansas City.
Yeah,
including Lamar.
I can't really explain it as far as how it happened. I honestly think it all chalks up to a coaching scheme. I think that John Harbaugh was outcoached by Andy Reid the same way that Kyle Shanahan was outcoached by Andy Reid. And let's not forget, this isn't the first big lead a Kyle Shanahan-led team has given up in the Super Bowl.
Oh, it's happened. Against the same team.
He was the offensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons against the New England Patriots when they were up 28-3 in the fourth quarter. And the Patriots won that game. So going back to the Steve Wilks thing, I think, no, it's Shanahan doesn't know how to manage and hold on to a lead late. But as far as the best team in the NFL, again, you'd argue that the Chiefs were the best team because they won the Super Bowl. But I truly believe that this Chiefs team that showed up at the Super Bowl would have been beaten by the Lions team that lost to the Niners in the NFC Championship game. I mean, the Chiefs without their two of their best players in Travis Kelce and I want to say it was who's their defensive lineman that was holding out early in the season. I mean, the Detroit Lions beat the Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs in week one. Now, the teams were a lot different by the end of the year.
Yeah, too long ago.
But I still, and I'm not saying that the Lions were the best team in the league. Let's go away from that. That's not what I'm saying. But I think that the Chiefs were beatable considering they had lost multiple times. They had to go on the road throughout the entire playoffs minus the wild card round. But at the end of the day, you've said it multiple times on the show. Patrick Mahomes did Patrick Mahomes things, despite my prediction that the Niners would win by two touchdowns. Volley Polly went on to social media and wanted to call you out and say, like Banker Bill said, I wish I had a sound clip of Ryan, you're wrong again.
Because
that's exactly what I was.
Wrong again, Ryan.
So we kind of agreed that despite maybe not being the best team in the league, they got hot. They won the Super Bowl. They are the best team in the NFL. They are Super Bowl champions three times in, 5 years? Back-to-back champions for the first time since in almost 20 years. Are the Chiefs the next great dynasty in the NFL? Like, we dealt with the Patriots despite having, five rings. It's hard to win a Super Bowl. But the Patriots were a dynasty for damn near 20 years. Are we looking for that to be the case here in Kansas City?
Yeah, I think that I think Kansas City has a couple things in common with the Patriots, which of course were the great dynasty for so long, right? Mm-hmm. Great quarterback play, unbelievable quarterback play when it matters the most. It's Tom Brady was incredible in the playoffs; he was fantastic, and Patrick Mahomes is just amazing. I hate to say it. It is going to be very difficult to beat the Kansas City Chiefs moving forward as long as Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback. You can rattle him. He's not superhuman, and he's been beaten before, but it is very, very – I mean, all you have to look at is that. But the reason we have to go, oh, poor team got scored on in overtime. We're going to have to let them try at least once. That Buffalo Bills game, 13 seconds. That's all you got to look at. That's Patrick Mahomes. And, they had the worst offensive team we've ever seen them have. They literally have one offensive weapon that makes you nervous. Does Isaiah Pacheco really make you nervous? Does he really?
Not after those fumbles in the Super Bowl.
No, he doesn't. He's never really made you nervous. He's a good above average running back. He looks flashier than he really is, right? Only real weapon they have on that team is Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
Rashee Rice had a good season, but somebody's got to catch the ball. Their quarterback's throwing for 40-some-hundred yards, right? So somebody's got to catch the ball. It's not going to be all Travis Kelce. They don't have any other wide receivers that make you go, whoa, none. They have none. So if they don't have any now, they're not going to have any in 5 years. Who cares? It's Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, not only that, but you talked about those Patriots teams. They were all led by great quarterbacks with guys surrounding the quarterback that weren't names that, jumped out at you.
Until Randy Moss was there, and then he caught 20-some touchdowns.
Yeah, but not to mention they had great defenses. The Kansas City Chiefs had a sneakily good defense this year. Like, their defense carried them to the playoffs, and they held a team that has arguably the most talented overall weapons collectively on a team in the NFL between Debo, CMC, we said his name a minute ago, the tight end, George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk. The list goes on. And they held them to 19 points in regulation. They blocked an extra point that would have essentially won the game for the Niners in regulation. So I'm right there with you. I think that unfortunately for the rest of the NFL, that it's going to be the Kansas City Chiefs world going forward, barring some sort of injury. Now, if you go back to those Patriots years with Tom Brady, there was a season where Tom Brady got hurt in week one and they had to run with Matt Castle the rest of that season. And they didn't make it that far. But you also, in that time, in that dynasty time with those New England Patriots teams, you had Peyton Manning and the Colts, Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers, to a lesser extent, Phillip Rivers and the Chargers. There were some good teams in the AFC that they had to compete with. Who do you think those teams are going to be to challenge the Chiefs in the AFC going forward? We already just talked about Baltimore. I think a lot of fans would expect the Chargers to do so, but that's not happening anytime soon with the fact that they're going through a coaching change. We don't know what their team is going to look like next year because Mike Williams hasn't been able to stay healthy. Austin Eckler is going to be a free agent, et cetera, et cetera. Who do you see being some of those teams to challenge in the AFC going forward?
I think Buffalo is going to continue to be there.
Yeah.
I think Buffalo has similar quarterback play from Josh Allen. Problem, Josh Allen can't throw as well as Patrick Mahomes can, but he's crazy scary with his legs. Until he gets broken, it's eventually going to wear him down. Massive dude, but just like a running back, he's going to get hit too much. I think they're going to be good.
Well, it's that style of quarterback. It doesn't last in the league, whether you're Michael Vick, even Cam Newton. Cam Newton was a linebacker playing quarterback, and even Cam Newton had a shorter career because of his style. So I'm right there with you. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I think Buffalo is going to be there. I keep wondering about the Chargers, why everybody sings Justin Herbert's praises except for me. And I mean, he's not bad. Well, he's not a bad quarterback, but they don't get it done at all. Like, it's embarrassingly bad. I wonder about them.
So bad that they fired their coach and GM before the end of the season this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there are teams that have elements that are good. They're looking for something like a quarterback to play really well. I think the Jets have built a really nice defense up there. They've got really good position, you know, Quinton Williams, you know, Sauce Gardner, really good players. They just can't find anybody to play quarterback, unfortunately, with, you know, and they somehow win some games with guys as bad as Zach Wilson. I don't know. I think one of the teams that you and I talked about at the beginning of the season, I think is going to be really interesting to watch next season is going to be the Colts. I feel like that roster is decent. I know they might lose Michael Pittman through free agency.
And Gardner Minshew.
And, well.
Listen, he had to carry the team this year.
He wasn't supposed to be the quarterback anyway. I think that's going to be really interesting to watch. So, it's the NFL, man. It's fun. Whatever the NFL decides, who's going to be good, Ryan? What's the script say?
I mean, listen, two teams that you didn't mention that I'm surprised you haven't mentioned, because you mentioned them before on the show, obviously. Your Miami Dolphins, I think, are going to be in the mix.
I'm worried about that.
I'm not. I think the Dolphins are going to be here for the next 4 to 5 years. That's their window to me.
$54 million over the cap right now in cap space, and they have about 6 major free agents walking out the door.
That's why you draft. You have to. If you were to believe, despite it being thwarted this year, that the script for next year's Super Bowl, based on the color scheme of the logo,
would
scream Lions Dolphins.
Stop it!
Your Super Bowl.
Stop it. Nevertheless, we're not doing that.
I still think the Dolphins have a window of about 4 to 5 years before they start to fall off. It's a team I'm surprised you didn't mention was the Houston Texans. I mean, this team, we both wrote them off. They had a really good defense despite being so bad in the 2022-2023 season. If CJ Stroud can continue what he did, I mean, that offense was filled with rookies, and all they did was take him to the playoffs. Like, considering how bad the AFC South was supposed to be, they've got a couple teams that are going to be challenged. I mean, I don't know if we're going to be looking at Jacksonville the next couple years, but there's some teams, especially, I mean, just over this way, closer to where Missouri is, where, you know, Kansas City plays and everything else, there's a lot of teams in the AFC that could be on the rise to eventually challenge the Chiefs.
I worry about the Texans. I want to see what CJ Stroud does moving forward. Sometimes when you're a rookie and nobody expected a whole lot. They thought Bryce Young was a better quarterback, right? So CJ Stroud didn't have as much pressure on him as, say, Bryce Young did in Carolina. We saw a quarterback. We already have precedent. The greatest rookie quarterback in the history of the NFL, Justin Herbert, has never been as good as he was his rookie season. He had the best stats of his rookie season. And it's you know, held true every year now. So I'd like
he
to see
what
he wasn't
supposed to be the starter either. He
until Tyrod Taylor got poked by a needle.
Yeah, you're right.
Punctured his lung, exactly. And then he turned out to be a really good rookie quarterback. So, again, I'd like to see what Stroud does now. When people have the expectation, when people see that, oh, this guy's really good, and now we get the scheme against him and things like that, then let's see what happens here too. But, yeah, I mean, there's teams out there, but we had teams this year. We didn't think that the Chiefs – you thought going into the playoffs the Chiefs were going to get beat by Miami because the Chiefs were posers. And come on, Patrick Mahomes.
Let me hear you say it. Come on.
Wrong again, Ryan.
I needed the sound clip.
Too bad you didn't. You know what's terrible? I just jumped another game ahead of you in the predictions, you know, and all that stuff. And I wish we would have gotten a final tally here at the end of season five, but that's okay. It's okay. If I took as big of an L as you did, I wouldn't put it up either.
So first of all, to that point, you finished, I believe, 65-38-1. And I finished somewhere around 55-48-1. So let's just go ahead and congratulate Banker Bill for outpicking me. We're gonna have to tweak the buys and sells next year because I made it too easy for you to beat me. So we're gonna have to figure out how to challenge it.
That's
next great. Year. Let's get Wait, back
that's
to 104
the topic. Games. Hang on. That's against the spread.
Yes,
right. We did against the spread. So 65 games correct in 104 games. I'm doing the math right now.
Something like
that's
that.
That's 62.5%. I feel pretty good about that.
Well, I'm glad
that puts me on par. If we were just picking straight up, I'd have killed it. But
same here. But I also tried to pick.
Not at my level. Come on. Wrong again, Ryan. What are you doing?
I hate you. Volley probably posed a question that I was going to pose anyway. Do the Kansas City Chiefs three-peat? We just talked about a bunch of teams that can compete with them. Volley Polly says no. I'm sure as a Titans fan, he hopes that the Titans are on the rise. But we just talked about some teams that are going to be really good, be it the Buffalo Bills, the Baltimore Ravens, etc. Do you think the Kansas City Chiefs can three-peat next season? Have we ever had a three-peat Super Bowl champion? Did the Patriots three-peat ever? Did the Cowboys of the 90s three-peat?
I feel like the Chicago Bulls were the only team to three-peat. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think we ever have.
Coming from a guy, I don't talk football. You bring the Chicago Bulls up. I'm kidding. Come on.
Yeah, it's famous. But I don't think it's possible. I don't think your window is so small. And I think the Chiefs keep it open with great quarterback. Great quarterback play and great coaching. I think and a really good GM, obviously, because they're bringing in the talent like L'Jarius Sneed and McDuffie and stuff like that. Those are draft picks that really panned out and played big roles in their move to the Super Bowl. But yeah, I think it's very difficult to keep top end. Chris Jones is a free agent. They got to figure out how to pay him. L'Jarius Sneed, I just mentioned him. He's a free agent, so they got to figure out if he's going to be on the team next season. You got to replace those guys if they leave. So I think it's really hard to run three in a row.
Here's a question because we've talked a lot about the Chiefs. We haven't talked much about the NFC or the San Francisco 49ers. We obviously know Steve Wilkes is out in San Francisco. There's a couple of guys out there, be it Mike Vrabel, be it Bill Belichick.
Who, at this point, good gracious, the kid
Come on.
Tells the old man, really?
Can you imagine Bill Belichick coaching the defense of the Niners?
Here's my – which of these defensive coordinators at this point – I mean, Steve Wilkes obviously did a pretty good job. We knew the San Francisco had a good defense all year long, right? And then they played pretty well in the Super Bowl.
They're losing some guys too. Chase Young's a free agent. Javon Kinlaw's a free agent.
That's true.
A lot of guys are leaving San Francisco.
Who wants that job? You've got obviously Kyle Shanahan's head is this big. He's a tiny little skinny head guy, but it's this big. He just fired the defensive coordinator after he failed the team in the Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you. I guess my question is because last year when the Eagles lost to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, you said that was their window, that the Chiefs were done or the Eagles were done. They go to the playoffs. They go one and done after being the last undefeated team in the NFL this year. Don't make it out of the wild card round. What are the San Francisco 49ers window look like going forward? Are they closing in? I just talked about the fact they're losing some pieces on defense. Greenlaw will not be ready for preseason minicamp because of his Achilles injury so late in the season. Has the San Francisco 49ers window closed and for the opportunity to win a Super Bowl? I mean, they made a Super Bowl a few years ago with Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick, a few years later with Jimmy Garoppolo, and now with Brock Purdy. And I still argue that they should have made the Super Bowl last year had Brock Purdy not gotten hurt. You think the Niners are done? You think there's no chance that they win a Super Bowl?
I do. I think that's too much time.
I don't know if I completely disagree with that. I think if the offense is going to be able to stay together, but they're all getting older. And we've talked about, I think Christian McCaffrey missed a game this year.
Here's why. They shouldn't have been there anyway. I told you that before the Super Bowl. They shouldn't have been there anyway. Detroit beat Dallas in Dallas. Detroit was the number one seed, and Detroit beat San Francisco in Detroit. Detroit should have been the team who's in the Super Bowl. And I think Detroit is the better team.
Okay, so I'm glad you're reading my mind here. So if San Francisco is done and their window is closed,
Detroit's a better team next year.
You think Detroit is a better team next year? Where they've got to go and sign Jonah Jackson, offensive line?
They had four contributions from rookie players. Four. Yeah. Those players are going to be better.
Their first two round picks.
Jahmyr Gibbs, Sam Laporta, Brian Branch. And help me.
Oh my gosh, Jack Campbell, middle linebacker.
Yeah. Those players did not expect to do it. They didn't expect to do anything in the NFL this year. They were fantastic. They'll be better next year. They pull another draft off like that, Detroit gets better.
All right. So then, if we look at the NFC side, who do you think are some up and coming teams? But I'm gonna preface it by saying that the Dallas Cowboys have been on the rise for years and just can't get over that playoff hump. We talked about the Eagles window being closed. We talked about the Lions being better next year than they are. And you said a lot of good things about the Packers earlier this year.
I like the Packers
during the season. And it's curious to think that the Bears are sitting with the number one pick and are obviously contemplating Caleb Williams with Justin Fields sitting on their roster. And Caleb Williams made it clear that he doesn't want to go to Chicago. Dumb. So having said all that, who are some of your NFC threats to challenge, not just the rest of the NFC, but the Chiefs in the Super Bowl over the next few years?
Detroit is I think my number one scary team. You said it. I like the Packers. Who else is really? We don't know what the Buccaneers looked really good up until they ran into Detroit.
And they're basically losing their entire.
They're
offense,
losing everybody. Everybody's leaving. Yeah, they're losing everybody. Who else would be really good?
How do you like the Rams? I mean, the Rams were – everybody forgot about the Rams winning the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
I like their coach. I like their coach. I think, but I worry that Cooper Kupp's getting a little bit old.
But you don't think Puka Nacua can make up for it?
I do, but I feel that, yes, they have Puka.
I mean, basically, so the Rams –
you got to have more than one trick pony usually. I don't think Stafford's going to carry that team.
So a few years ago when it was Stafford, it was – even before Stafford, it was Jared Goff with Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. And now you've got Stafford, and OBJ, but it's neither here nor there. Now you've got Stafford, but now you've got Puka Nacua and Tutu Atwell with an aging, and you just said his name, and I can't believe I can't say it again, Cooper Kupp. So do you think it's time for the Rams to draft a quarterback and maybe start looking at the future with Matt Stafford getting older?
I mean, I don't think he's that old yet. I think he's, but I just don't know if he's one of the guys he's never been that good of a guy where he's going to carry a team.
You know who I'd love to see get? You know who I'd love to see get drafted to the Rams in about the third round? You know who I'm going to say.
Don't say it. Come on.
You know who I'm going to say.
Why? Why?
Do you think
you just want him to get drafted in the third round no matter what team picks him?
Do you not think it would benefit him to sit behind Matt Stafford for a few years?
I'm not sure he's ever a starter.
For those of you who don't know, we're talking about Gamecocks quarterback Spencer Rattler, the MVP of the Senior Bowl, the guy who threw for a ton of yards at South Carolina despite getting sacked on David Carr type numbers this year. Yeah. So, okay. So you the Rams scare you because you don't know what the future is with Stafford.
Yeah.
You like the Lions. Who else in the NFC are you looking at to being the next challengers in the NFC? And I know I threw this on a whim.
So
you weren't prepared for this.
I really like the Packers. I really do. I don't know why. I really do. That's tough though, because they're in the same division. But I feel like if whoever beats on each other and gets out of that division is going to be a really tough team. You got to admit, San Francisco ran through both those teams, and both times they get pretty lucky.
Yeah,
I don't say lucky because they did beat Green Bay. But there was a play that Green Bay could have intercepted Brock Purdy and dropped the ball, hit somebody square in the chest. And
the Packers smashed the Cowboys in the playoffs too.
I don't like the Cowboys. I don't like anybody from the East. I think the East is terrible. Yeah.
I think the which is crazy because they had two of the best teams in the league this year, and the Cowboys and the Eagles. I don't like the Packers, not just because I'm a Lions fan. I think this is more of a flash in the pan for Jordan Love this year. I don't think he's going to be able to maintain it.
I think he's going to be really good.
See, I think everybody's in that same opinion that you are, that the Packers went from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers to Jordan Love, and they've hit on all three of them. I don't think they've hit. I think Jordan Love had a crazy good year. You got to think he played the bad Vikings twice. They had to play the bad Bears twice. They beat up on the Lions, but the Lions have some improvement to do on the defense. They need some better cornerbacks. They need some more pass rushers. So I think Green Bay's a flash in the pan. I'll tell you, I'm with you. The NFC East scares me. I think the NFC North is going to get heavy real quick because if the Vikings can turn around and now see – I don't like the Vikings either because Justin Jefferson has already basically come out and said to pay me. So he's going to cripple the Vikings just like Joe Flacco crippled the Ravens a few years ago. If you look out west, the Niners are still going to be there. I do like the Rams. I think they know what they're doing. Regardless of whoever they get in the draft, I think they're going to draft a quarterback for the future. Shannon, I'm guessing you're asking about Dobbs or Cousins for Minnesota. Both of them are free agents at the end of the year. So I don't know. Obviously, Cousins is the better quarterback.
Oh my gosh, not even close.
But I don't know if Cousins goes back to Minnesota. Well, that's waited to be seen. So I like the Rams going forward. I still think the Niners are going to be there, but again, the Niners are two injuries on offense away from not competing in games in general. I'm trying to think. Nobody in the South scares me.
I think they're going to be good. I think the Niners are going to be a good team. I don't think we're going to lose them as a team that makes the playoffs. I just don't think that they are. I think this was – I feel like I've said it every year. The first time they lost to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, I didn't expect them to win. Jimmy Garoppolo – I do like Jimmy Garoppolo. I didn't think he was good enough to beat Mahomes. When they lost to the Ravens back in the day, I thought that was their real shot. I thought that was the best team. And Brock Purdy's very good. He's very good. Cam Newton, be damned. But I mean, honestly,
exactly.
But I don't think that they. I don't think they make it back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really fun speculating going forward because the team, everybody's going to look a lot different this time next season. This time in August. I mean, we're 6 months away from training camp and. We're, 3 months away from the NFL draft? We're a month and a half away from the UFL. Yep. So despite this show coming to the end of season 5, and Bill, would you believe it if I told you that we had, I want to say 75 episodes of the show this season? Between wrestling and football shows, we had 75. I'm actually pulling it up right now. I had my season 5 finale shout out with Michael Davis earlier this week for the wrestling show. This is our 75th episode of season 5, 75th and final episode of season 5. But we're going to be back and after it again come season 6 when the UFL comes. We've reached the end of the season finale. And, we, you know, as every show goes, we have to fill it out with our Homer's Corner. And, Bill, we both sort of have the same message for Homer's Corner this week. So I'll let you take the floor before I continue with mine.
I wanted to thank you, man. Thanks to Bully Rye. You put this whole thing together. You invited me on the show many moons ago. We have a ton of fun. You and I talk about this all the time. We talk, almost every day. And we talk a lot about the podcast, a lot about what we want to talk about in the podcast. We argue offline. I mean, you guys should hear some of our arguments off the air. Like, it's phenomenal. They're way worse. Yeah, they're way worse. But man, I just appreciate it. I really appreciate you allowing me to come on here with you every week and talk football. And thank you to you for doing this, man. It's really fun. And I'm retiring. No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. Now you put it all together and you have to do work on it after we get off of this. And I really appreciate your effort and having me here.
No, listen, I thank you, man. This show, honestly, the football show wouldn't be the same without you. I did the football show for a while by myself and it wasn't the same. Obviously, we never went live. It was just me sitting on a computer talking to myself for an hour. No video because I have the face for radio.
Radio, yeah, yeah.
And despite your daughter Katie getting irritated every time we get together and talking sports, we do have a good time with it. You know, we disagree on a lot of things, we agree on a lot of things, and I think that's what makes it so enjoyable to come on here and talk to you, and hopefully spread the word of the show and spread our word of sports mediocre sports knowledge to the rest of our viewers and followers on all platforms. But to your point, like I know you thanked me and I appreciate the thanks. And like I said, I couldn't do the show without you. I want to take my Homer's Corner to thank everybody who watches the show. Despite every week coming on and talking about Gamecock women's basketball or Gamecock men's basketball or Gamecocks in the NFL or any other Homerism that I want to talk about, you still keep coming back to listen to what we have to say about football. We saw huge growth on the Facebook followers this year. We tripled in followers. We're still looking for our first 1,000 followers, subscribers, so if you will. So if you haven't already done so, share this podcast with your friends and see if we can continue to grow and hit our first 1,000 come season 6 of the show. But again, if we didn't have people that asked questions and told us that they enjoy listening to the show, we wouldn't keep coming back. I mean, we probably would, but we wouldn't go live so that you could be part of the conversation. We would talk about it for maybe 45 minutes to an hour, and you guys would be done with us. So I wanted to take the opportunity on the season finale to thank you all for being a part of the show with us. As Bill continues to fall asleep while I'm giving you my message.
I'm just in your world, man. I was taking a nap. The longest Homer's Corner ever. At least we didn't get into any kind of girls basketball today.
Not girls basketball, but I got a basketball game to watch tonight. Gamecock men's basketball taking on another top 15 team.
Nobody cares.
Bill, are you as upset about me that the season has come to an end?
I'm sad. I am sad, but I am excited to reload and come back with UFL stuff. I really hope that everybody comes back for the UFL stuff. Our goal with the XFL primer last year, I have no idea how many people listened to it because it was like 6 hours long.
You're not wrong.
So long.
Oh, you're not wrong.
It was to make the XFL more exciting for people to watch so that they actually could look at each team and go, I don't know who's on this team, but I listened to Tap Outs and Touchdowns and those guys told me to look for these guys. I don't know who else it worked for, but it definitely worked for me. So it made the XFL way more fun. I'll never forget Lucky Jackson. I hope he's still on the DC Defenders. So yeah, I'm looking forward to coming back and doing the research and figuring out those rosters and getting going with season 6.
Well, we might not be on the show, but we will be promoting the show on Facebook as we're trying to get you as excited for the UFL as we are. But unfortunately, season 5,
One last thing. I want to thank my wife tonight because it's Valentine's Day. So happy Valentine's Day to my wife. And she goes, "Do you have a podcast tonight?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do." She goes, "It's Valentine's Day." And I'm like,
"I totally didn't think about that either."
It's what? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, we never thought.
Oh, no.
So thank you, my wife, for allowing me to do this. And we actually are a little bit short. We're way shorter than we usually are. So it'll give me a couple minutes to hang out with her.
Thanks to everybody who is part of the show. As too many comments to read out. Thanks to everybody who liked and loved the post. Thanks to everybody who watched and listened live with us and joined the conversation. Thanks to everybody who has been part of this podcast, listened to this podcast, watched this podcast in season 5. Again, we're going to be promoting UFL stuff on our social media. Make sure you go to facebook.com/tapoutsandtouchdowns, at tapoutsandtds on Twitter. Go search the YouTube channel, and we're going to hopefully get you as excited for the UFL as we are. For Banker Bill, it's your guy, Bully Rye. Thanks for a phenomenal season 5, and we'll see you in season 6 right here on Tap Outs and Touchdowns.